As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk, a film photography podcast. I'm your host, Chris.
I'm Tim.
And today's special guest, we have Clint Woodside from Deadbeat Club. Hey, Clint, thanks for joining us.
Great to be here.
It's really good to have you back, because I'll let the listeners know we had a little technical difficulty the last time.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to get back into it. But
another one chalked up into the lost episode. Yeah.
Can you give us a background on yourself and how you got started in photography and all that stuff?
I grew up in Buffalo, New York. I started learning photography in high school. There was a darkroom in my high school, and pretty much like the second I started working in the darkroom, I was kind of hooked. And it was just a fun thing to take pictures of friends and pictures at shows and various random dumb things. and then, yeah, I think kind of, I don't know, just a lot of growing up in Buffalo. Eventually moved to New York City and went to school for graphic design there. And then lived a life in graphic design for quite some time and had a meltdown and went back to photography.
How was that?
Yeah, kind of rough. Walked away from all that and then started taking pictures again probably about 15 years ago now. And kind of been feeling a lot better about that than anything else, I think. So I stuck with that, yeah.
Now, have you always been on film, or were you digital for a while, like most
of
us?
Yeah, so when I'm 43, so I grew up and there wasn't like digital, there was rumors of it, but in reality, it really wasn't happening at all. Like when I moved to New York, there was this one, we got a tour of this one fancy photo studio, and they had like a $20,000 digital camera that probably took like the crappiest photos at the time.
Right, yeah.
It's like
so anyway, yeah. So anyway, like when I was growing up, all there was film. There was no such thing as digital, really. And so, I mean, I had no choice in the beginning. And then when I came back, digital took over the world while I was on my, you know, we'll call it a hiatus, I guess. And when I came back, I bought like one digital camera and was kind of just taking photos with that, and it just didn't feel the way I remembered and felt comfortable. Mm. So I just went back to film, and you know, it's where I eat and sleep right now. I've been trying some of these mirrorless guys and these medium format ones, kind of running them out. And I shoot with a Leica M7 now, so I rented the M10 to see like if right or anything.
How's that?
It's cool. It still didn't feel like, I mean, it's probably, you know, it felt, I don't know, I just didn't have anything that felt right, you know. But I've also been shooting with a Mamiya 7, which is a medium format camera, a 6.7, and I rented those new Fuji medium format that is like really compact. It's the, I don't know, the
I know which one you mean. I can't think of the name either.
I think it's the 50. Like, there's a 50R and a 50S, but this is really nerdy talk, so everybody who's listening, I'm very sorry. I gave that a shot, and that felt a little more comfortable than the than even the Leica one. So I think I don't know. I haven't been sold on any of it yet, though.
Where did you rent the M10?
Just online, this place called Lens Rentals.
I'm so curious. I've seen like amazing things come out of that.
And yeah.
I just want to see how it feels.
My friend Cheryl, I did a zine called This Is What Democracy Looks Like. And it's a huge chunk of it is, it's by this woman, Cheryl Dunn. A huge chunk of it is protest photos. And a lot of it is shot on a monochrome. Black and white, like it is amazingly beautiful photos. And so, like, you know, I'm not shitting on it at all. I think there's things to be said about this new wave and like the new crop of digital cameras that seem a little more respectful to traditions of photography.
Yeah, I know Leica just came out with another, I think it is an M10 as well, but it doesn't have a digital back.
Yeah.
It doesn't have an LCD screen, and it has a film winder, which is kind of crazy, too.
Well, what's funny is I was using that new Leica M10, it's the M10P is what I was using, and P. I think that new one is the M10D or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I think,
It's an M10 one of those letters. Something. And mine that I was renting was... It the point of this one is that it's quieter than the M10, I guess, is what the main thing everybody... Oh, and it has touch screen on the back. So I was shooting with it the whole time, and I would never look at the screen after I took the photo to see if it was a good photo or not. So it was like kind of like, I don't know, I feel like I could use that the one without the back and...
Yeah, for sure.
You know? But I feel like also, you know, if you... have the option.
Yeah, exactly.
You'd like to have it. Right, exactly. I don't know. Anyway, nerd talk.
Well, it makes sense that you have a graphic design background because, I mean, like we should definitely talk about Deadbeat Club because I'm a fan.
Yeah.
Thank you guys.
How did that all come about? How did Deadbeat Club start?
Deadbeat Club is kind of a weird story. I was making zines since like the early 90s and various like pictures of hardcore bands and like all these like various punk zines and whatever, and I would submit photos for that. And so I was making zines forever. When I moved to LA, I was selling zines mostly through this collective I was part of called Space 1026 when I was living in Philadelphia. I lived in Philly for like 10 years before I moved here to LA.
Philly.
Yeah. And
I'm from Pennsylvania, so Philly was like
nice. What part?
Like Lancaster, living in Lancaster area.
Yeah, sick. Mm. Okay. You used to go there for shows a ton.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Do you know Alex T?
Yeah. Oh my god. There yeah. In Reading. Yeah.
There you go.
That's so nuts. Yep. I have a scar on my forehead from his basement. He used to have that, or it was a garage or basement.
It was a basement, his parents' basement. Yeah. He'd have all those crazy shows.
And Albatross was playing there one night, and I was just out of my mind, and I banged my head right off the beam and had to go to the ER.
There's a very strong chance that I was at that show.
Well, yeah, I'm sure.
That would be insane.
It's crazy. Not as insane as you think. Like, the way things work in the DIY punk scene, it's the various, like, it's very, it's a family affair. Like, it's pretty funny. Is.
That's awesome, man.
One of my favorite shows that I've ever been to was this band Stop It, who are friends from, they were from Richmond. And then, Yafet Koto, which is a band from Oakland. They played in the basement, and it was like one of the most epic shows I've ever seen. And it was in Alex T's basement. So anyway.
Shout out Alex T.
Small world, guys.
No shit. I haven't talked to Alex in forever, but you know.
No, me neither. I haven't. I mean, it's probably been about 20 years.
Probably 15, something like that.
15 years. Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah. Anyway. So we're... Oh, yeah. So... What were we saying? Oh, yeah. Zines. So forever, I was making zines of like shows and whatever. And I joined an artist collective in Philadelphia called Space 1026. And they were big on silk screening and making zines and making more like smaller run art, like, but still like mass produced art and things for the people.
So rad.
And that, so I was selling a lot of stuff through them, and because I moved here, I didn't really have as much of an outlet. And at the same time, and it kind of ran tangentially, I was doing another project called Never Nothing, which was like four friends that were all over the earth. I had one in Australia, me in Philly, a friend in Oakland, and then a friend in Los Angeles. And we were just like, we made a blog and we would just share photos. Yeah. It started just for us to all keep up with each other, but it got public. It was never private. So yeah. People got into it.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just like, people were just like kind of stoked on it for a while. And we like did shows and we made a big zine kind of newsprint thing. And I had a really good time with that. So fast forward, that dies down. I moved to California and I didn't really have an outlet. So I basically, with a friend who's no longer involved, who didn't do photography at all or make zines really, he just made things that were sellable. Bought a URL called Deadbeat Club. I got a big cartel called Deadbeat Club. And so we just started selling stuff and that became the name. And then, you know, like just me putting stuff out and my friend putting stuff out. And my friend had a kid and kind of was like working on other stuff that it wasn't so much his thing. And I was still making zines. So I was just, it started out as me as just a website to sell zines. And then the first thing that I did that wasn't just one of my zines is for my friend Ed Templeton, who people probably know. And if you know Deadbeat Club, you definitely know Ed. He's a professional skateboarder. He shattered his leg skateboarding, and because of that, he was couch ridden and for like 6 months to a year. And so he was a friend of mine, and I would go down and visit, and you know, I'd just be like, "Man, we gotta like make up a project or something for you to do while you're just chilling on this couch."
That's easy to just like fall into depression, like especially for somebody like him to not be able to get off the couch for a year. That's insane.
Exactly. And he had some bouts with it, like nothing major, fortunately. He's a pretty resilient dude. So he shattered his leg, was couch ridden. I was going down to visit him just to like see what's up and hang out and whatever. And we would have one of the things I didn't have when I moved to Los Angeles was friends to have like art talks with and like just kind of like, which was like a standard thing in Philly because we were all in this big collective building. So Ed lives like an hour away at least. So it wasn't all the time, but I would go down and we just like shoot the shit about like books that came out and like where we are with our work and everything. It was really helpful then. So I was like, man, why don't we just do a zine together and then you'll have a small project to do and I'll just throw it on the website. You know, we don't have to do anything special or anything like that. We'll just, and also at the same time, at that point, no one was like doing huge like zine releases and stuff like that. Like it was just like, I made a zine. Here you go. Like enjoy it, you know? So we made a zine and I made a good chunk of copies of it and it sold super fast online because Ed is, you know, Ed's popular. I was like, whoa, that was crazy. And I also had a really good time editing and designing someone else's work, which is like something I wasn't doing because all I had was me. And so at that point, I was like, that was super fun. And, you know, that was like the fourth or fifth thing that I had as in zine form on the website. And we didn't even put the name Deadbeat Club on the zine. And then right after that, a friend of mine, my friend Devin, who is down in Huntington and really good friends with Ed in Indiana too, and he was putting out a thing and I was like, oh, you should give me some copies and I'll sell it on the website. And it's kind of like slowly turned into like a little bit of a distro thing. And when he was putting it together, he was like, can I put the Deadbeat Club logo on the zine? And I was like, I was like, that's weird, but if you want to. Sure. So I sent him that and I was like, why don't you make it number 5? Because Ed and I was the fourth zine that was on that website. Yeah. And ever since then, we've just been kind of numbering everything like it was like 7 inches or like a record or something like that.
Yeah.
So what number are you on now?
We're on 67, nice. I think. I don't, I'm wow. not, I think That's something so awesome. Like that. Yeah. it's a book, the next one that's coming out. I could be off. I don't have the thing in front. Actually, here, hang on. One of the last things I did, which is this Tim Carpenter, Nathan Pierce book. This is number 62. And then there's another thing after that was 63, 64. Yeah, I think we're at 65. 66, because this is the latest zine that we did, which is the Patrick O'Dell zine.
Got that one sitting right over
there. Nice, nice. Yeah, so, you know, we just started putting out zine. Devin made the zine and just put the logo in there himself, and I sold it on the website. And then right when that was all, like, kind of, like, forming into, like, an actual thing, the first LA Art Book Fair that happened out here came to town. And before it happened, I was talking with my friend Ray, who does Hamburger Eyes, which has been around forever. And
yeah,
you know,
Hamburger Eyes is great. Yeah, I love them.
They're pretty amazing people. I mean, it's really just Ray. I mean, at the time there were more people involved, but that, like, now it's really just Ray Poetz, and that dude is a unstoppable force. Him and I were talking, and since I lived on the East Coast for a long time, I was going to the New York book fairs all the time. And I'm like, dude, Ray, this is like a serious thing. We should, like, be all up in this thing. And he was like, okay. He didn't really know much about it because he never lived out there. And I think on zine culture and, like, on the mass that it is now, zine culture has always been huge, but, like, on the mass that it is now, it's really, you know, it's really changed in the last, like, probably, like, 7 years or so. So Ray and I originally were going to split a table. And as we were going, Ray, Printed Matter didn't have as many people involved as they did then, and they were like, why don't you guys just each take a table, because we don't have, like, we have room. And we were like, oh, okay. And okay. That was good for Ray, because he had, like, at least 100 or so, 100 and plus stuff out, because there was a year or two before that, his goal was to put out 100 zines for people, like 100 different zines within a year. So he had a huge stack of shit already. And it was great for him. And for me, I only had like 5 or 6 things out. And I was like, oh, shit. Mm. So so it kind of like made me be like, okay, I got to like ramp this up and like put out a bunch of stuff just to fill the table, really. And so it worked out awesome. It kind of sprungboard. I basically like woke up and had a publishing company because I had to like put stuff out. And it just kind of blew up. And people seemed to like it. So I'm very happy that people are excited about it. About a year and a half to 2 years ago, we started doing hardcover books and like really kind of ramped it up a little bit. And, you know, we still make zines, which are kind of important part of the process. And, you know, we're where we come from. So we always want to have like some kind of like 1 foot in the respect to that stuff. And then, yeah. So now it's just kind of seeing what kind of publishing company, what a publishing company that's run by one dude that comes from this like kind of DIY punk scene and like has that. Let's see what it turns into. I don't know. You know, it's an experiment. It's like, like Discord Records is like a very important influence on me, which is a punk label from Washington, D.C. and like, you know, Minor Threat. Ian. Mm-hmm. Like these are all people that I grew up knowing because I grew up on the East Coast and like I would book a bunch of hardcore shows and stuff. So like these guys are all pretty influential people in my life. And so I would like, I want to run a publishing company like somebody would run a punk label. So Discord has always been an experiment. And if one day they just like are like, okay, well, this experiment is done, well, then that's fine. But right. And that's the same situation for Deadbeat Club. It's like, okay, we're going to keep making this until we shouldn't make this anymore.
Right.
You know, so that's kind of where we are right now.
That's so crazy. Like, it's all starting to make sense. Like, why I'm so attracted to Deadbeat Club and stuff. Because it's definitely, you've got that, like, East Coast punk rock vibe thing going on. And I think I first heard of the whole Deadbeat Club thing is when Vans did that series on like Ray and you and Andrea Sonnenberg and like all those people and stuff. And it was just crazy to see that. I kind of was sold on the whole thing from then on. But
yeah, that was by Tobin Yelland, who is like,
Tobin's the man.
Who's talk like, about life influencing person. Like he did all these skate videos that I used to watch. Like he did the stereo video, which like I was on the verge of quitting when that came out. And I was, that like kept me in skateboarding for like another 10 years because it's just such an amazing and completely different version of what was happening at the time. So it's pretty amazing stuff for sure. Yeah. Tobin's untouchable.
Yeah. He's on the list of people I want to get on the show as well. Nice. He would be great Yeah, you keep saying we as in, are you still just you're doing Deadbeat all yourself? Is it just you, or do you have kind of people, helping out at all? Or,
well, my wife helps out a lot. But you know, there's kind of two versions of Deadbeat Club, and it's kind of strange. Like, we did a bunch of art shows for a long time, and you know, we might actually ramp it up again, but I don't know right now. So there's the publishing wing of Deadbeat Club. And there's the art show wing of Deadbeat Club. And they obviously work together as like a way to help each other out. Mm-hmm. The shows do wonders for selling books. The books are what makes people come to the shows. It's very, you know, symbiotic, to use a buzzword. and so when I say we, it's because a lot of people have helped do this along the way with me. And, you know, yes, I guess it's awkward for me to say, yes, I'm the decision maker about pretty much everything that involves Deadbeat Club. At the same time, all the books that, you know, I edit and design most of the books.
I remember from the last time we talked, you like curate for people too, right? Like,
So like, I edit and design all the books, except like, you know, when people are like, I have a finished book and I want to show it to you, right, and it's the right thing and it like makes sense. Like I did that book, Hairdos of Defiance, and Ed Templeton, and Ed basically had a PDF and he was like, this is kind of what I want to do. And like, that was basically based off of a different book that I did. That was this book called Undercover Cars. He's like, that was a really cool format. I want to make a book that's along those lines. And I basically just sent him the InDesign file for that book. And I deleted all the photos out of it. And I was like, why don't you make a book and fill in the blanks, basically, is kind of what it was. And he created it himself. So like, I would never, like, he made his own monster. And I was like, that's a cool monster.
Yeah.
Let me do that, you know.
That's a cool little series too. I like the cover, like how the cover feels. Yeah. And it's just a cool little book, you know.
Yeah. So it's kind of interesting. I mean, I haven't done another one and I'm like kind of just waiting for the next thing. But like that series of that size and whatever, I really like the way that works. Is like, those are typographic series. Like, Ed's is pictures of everybody with mohawks. Mine is pictures of cars that are covered by tarps. So like, it's like, and every photo is that. So I kind of like the idea of maybe expanding that as a larger series. And who knows what that's going to turn into. I don't have another topographic photo series from anyone yet, but you know, and now as I say that, get ready for all the emails of everybody. I got all these photos of mailboxes. Check it out. You know, like things like that. Like, but yeah, it's something that I'm exploring in the back of my head. That's the thing. A lot of these things are just like, oh, that's an idea. And then it goes in the shelf until the right thing pops up.
Yeah.
And how do you go about getting like the next artist for these projects, book, whether it's a book or a zine or.
Yeah, a lot of it is, an important part of it is largely working with people I know, because there's so much trust that goes into, on both sides of the river.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of trust for me to put something out and work with somebody, and then it takes a lot of trust for them to trust me to put it out. So, I usually work with a lot of people I know, but I'm very deeply entrenched in the photo world, especially out here. So I think, you know, I'm just always looking for something rad. And like, you know, we just went out to Paris for a book fair, in November, and I met a ton of people out there.
I was gonna say, how was that?
That was awesome.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah. The book fair that we went to was on a boat called Polycopies. Ugh. And what? It was so weird. Like, the boat was stationary. It stayed there. Still. But
oh, okay. Yeah.
Every time,
I thought you were on like a cruise.
No. Captive audience. No, it was, it's a book fair that, so there's a huge photo festival that happens in Paris every year called Paris Photo.
Right. And they used to come to LA.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been a couple of times. It was at the Universal.
Right.
Or no, Paramount Lot, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was a pretty...
That was amazing.
Those, yeah,
I'm so sad they don't do it anymore over here.
Yeah. When they quit, they sent this like... When they stopped doing it in LA, they sent this really gnarly letter that was like, well, obviously Los Angeles doesn't have the collector base to be ready for our kind of events and stuff like that.
Shade.
It was really funny. It was crazy. I mean, they're super fancy. So yeah. You know, and the one in LA, I mean, the one in Paris is gigantic.
Yeah.
And it's just,
I remember it was interesting going to the one in LA cause it was always on the back lot. So it was like, you know, you're walking through like the movie set and then it like past the Friends set or whatever. And then like into a soundstage when it'd be set up with all the photos. So it was like, for me, I was like, this is the best of both worlds. It's the movies and it's the art. Like, I love it so much. And so I was so sad when they stopped.
Those LA, Paris Photo LA, those were like really important moments in both my career as a photographer and for Deadbeat Club, because we honestly, like, it helped really solidify a really great solid crew of all the publishers in LA, because DA, so it was on the New York back lot.
Yes.
And so a ton of artists and photographers that were from New York that now all live out here were like, oh shit, this is kind of really weird. We're in LA, but we're in New York. Yeah. And then at the same time, DAP, which is like the major distributor of art books in America, they rented like this amazing corner spot that like every gallery basically had its own brownstone, mm-hmm. or they were in these like sound booths that were in the sound stages and they each had a booth.
Right. Yeah.
But
that is so crazy.
Yeah.
It was
like
awesome.
I'm just like mentally picturing
it was
this
amazing.
And it just sounds amazing.
But it was amazingly awesome and easy to be able to digest each show. So you would go in a brownstone and it would just be this gallery mm-hmm. had a house show.
Yeah.
And it was just stuff hanging up on the walls. So, but DAP rented this amazing corner spot in, like, you know, it's kind of like if it was at Astor Place or something, and it was like a bookshop that was just like in New York, and they had picnic tables and all this stuff, and all of us just chilled super hard at DAP because they were also having most of the signings. So most of the artists that, like, this is how I became really good friends with Todd Heido, was at this show. And how I became like one of my closest friends and one of the best art book publishers, I think, in the world is this publishing company called Nasraeli. And they became like, Chris, who runs Nasraeli, has become one of my closest friends. Like, I just got married probably 3 or 4 months ago, and we got married on his farm in Paso Robles. And
congratulations.
Thank you. He's like family to me and my wife. And that's how we met, was just at DAP's corner, like, bookshop.
Aww.
And it was just like, that was a really important time, I think, in LA. It's a bummer that Paris doesn't do it. Paris Photo doesn't do it out here anymore. But those like two times that they did do it were just really awesome and really important. So, and it introduced me to tons of people, you know.
Man.
Yeah.
When are you doing a book with Todd?
Oh, we did it. We did one a little while ago.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, we did like this crazy poster fold out thing that it was really awesome. It was so, back in the day, we used to make these, like, you take a letter sheet of paper and fold it in a weird way and then cut it down the middle. And it would be like a tiny one, like a little zine that's probably like the size of a Post-it. And you would be able to like flip through like 6 pages or something like that. And then you would unfold it.
That's
and
so
it would be
cool.
And it would be a poster. So a letter size sheet of paper. So I found out the largest sheet you can put on a offset press. And I just figured out the math on how to make a gigantic version of
kidding.
That.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. So Todd and I worked on that together, and we made, it's called Collage Number 3 was what it was called. And, so inside, when it folds out, there's this giant, he was making work where it was tons of those little archival photos and his own photos all framed within one big thing, one big frame. So, you know, it was like things pinned and taped and stuff inside of a frame. It was really, really amazing. And so he sold a bunch of those. And one he made, he sold before it was even shown. And so he was like, I want to be able to show that to people. So can we make a print of it? And so it was basically a flat version of the frame piece. And
yeah.
And then when you, the, there's like a little bit of editorial that leads up to the unfolding of the poster.
That's so cool.
It was really an awesome project.
I'm so bummed that I missed that.
Yeah, it did. It sold pretty fast. Todd and I are talking about doing a new thing right now. So, I don't know. Who knows where it's going to go? And it, you know,
it might take
a year. It might take five. Who knows? So,
obviously, these series that you do, they're like limited runs. Is there only a certain number that you make every time, or do you make them to sell and then stop? How does that work?
When you're publishing and when you're on press, you have to have like a number ahead of time.
Yeah.
To be like, I need to do. And it, I mean, so the idea is, because it started with zines, and at the time in my apartment. I've moved into a house since then, but I had the tiniest apartment in Los Angeles when I first moved here. And I just didn't have room to store anything. So I would make stuff with the intention that it would eventually sell out, and it would, and then the idea was to be, to, the idea was to move on to the next thing. So, and there were zines. So it shouldn't be like this heavy opus kind of thing. But that said, I wanted it to stick around long enough so that it was fair for everyone to be able to get it. It shouldn't be like this, you know, elitist thing where it's like, oh, well, you have to be there or you have to be friends with so-and-so to get your hands on it. So I would usually, it started out with just printing out about 200 zines. And then for some people who sell stuff like in the blink of an eye, I would go up to like 400. And that was the rule in the beginning. And now it's completely different. Like right now, actually now it's not completely different. With the zines, it's like 300 to 500, depending on what's going on. And then with the books, like Ed's hairdo book, I printed 1,500. But like I just did a book for this guy, Steve Banks, who is, it's archival photos that he shot in 1967. He did this workshop with Richard Avedon. And it's all the work from that workshop, which is just him going to beauty salons in like on the East Coast. And so it's kind of a zine, but it's also like it's offset print and it's really like really nicely printed. It's honestly, I think it's one of the best printings that we've done, but we only made 300 of those. And that made it really expensive to make because the more you make, the cheaper it gets.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a $30 zine, but it's also 9x12. So it's big and it's like on really nice paper and it's printed really beautifully. It's honestly like, I think it's one of the best print jobs we've done so far. So I was really happy with that one. But yeah, so like the numbers are kind of like, honestly, everything that we put out is me sitting at my desk for like 2 days doing math and trying to like explore every certain way that I can make it make sense, you know?
Crazy.
Yeah.
Do you ever go back to basics ever? Do you ever do like little things for yourself anymore? Like little like Xerox zines or anything kind of,
yeah,
you know, just to kind of level out?
More than anything, I'm like, I try to get away from the screen as much as I can. And if this is just for me and my practice and my projects that I work on, I'll make prints. I used to like, until somewhat recently, I was making prints in the dark room all the time and making these work prints so that I had everything on hand and I was able to, you know, I think it's the tangible object is a very important thing. So I was making,
agreed.
I was making like 8x10s and 11x14 prints, but since I only shoot color, making those prints is just such a fucking, like, it's such a heavy amount of work. So I bought one of those, archival pigment printers. There's a Canon that I just have really fallen in love with. And so I have a bulletin board that I'm printing these prints on and they're up on my bulletin board and stuff like that. And I'm kind of just working with that. When I make the books and the zines, often I'll print everything out and lay it down and make sure everything makes sense and everything. But I haven't really made like a mass photocopied thing for a while. Lately though, a fun thing that we're doing now with mail order, and we sell them at the table sometimes too at like various book fairs. We make like these one sheet, which is a 12x18 all the like unfolded all the way, it's a 12 by 18 sheet, but it's basically just folded in half and then in half the other way. And it's just this like one sheet, small project thing that I'm doing for various people. Like I did one for Tim Carpenter, Nathan Pierce. I did one. And then Dan Monick is, there's one that's made by Dan Monick right now. And it's just like, hey, I have this like, this vehicle that's like, you know, 8 to 10 photos, maybe 15 photos. Like if you have a small project that doesn't really have a home, this is how you would get, this is how you would do it. This is like a good way to get it out, but also it's a free thing that comes with everything that when you order something, cool. It comes free with every order that you get. You like get a sticker and then you get this, I call them the Deadbeat Club supplementals is what they're, that's the series.
I love
what
that.
It's called. Yeah.
Everybody likes freebies.
Yeah, I think one came with, I kind of fell out there for a second, but oh. I'm back. my internet dropped out. But I forget which zine it was that I got, or was it the Ed book that you, the rock, you did one that was like a big rock? Or
yeah, that was the one that I did, and that's gone now. Like, that's the thing, is like, yeah. I'll only make like probably like 100 to 200 of those, because it's just free stuff to go in the, I can't like drop too much money on right. it.
But yeah, yeah.
And again, that's a huge math equation where it's like, okay, how many can I make for under, so that it like it doesn't cost more than $1 a sheet, like after printing and everything, because mm-hmm. I'm just giving it away. And like book publishing is 100% a margins game, and you just have to constantly figure out the cheapest mm-hmm. way and how you can cut corners and just like really, you know, it's tough. So
do you use the... Do you kind of use the same printer all the time, or do you have like a group of people that you go to for stuff like that? Or
I have one that I've been working with a lot, which is in Istanbul. I'm actually flying to Istanbul next week to go on press for
no kidding.
Yeah. I've never been there on press, so I'm pretty excited about that. It's a book. I'm doing a book for this photographer, Cole Barish, who is just, he just blows my mind. Every single time he puts something out, it just floors me.
Whoa.
So we're doing a book about his child. He just had a kid probably about a year ago, and this is the birth of his child, and at the exact same time, there was a storm that hit. He lives in Cape Cod, and there's a huge storm that hit Cape Cod, and this is him photographing the birth of his child and the storm at the same time.
Wow, I love that.
Wow.
That's so cool.
So, yeah, because it's...
What a concept.
Yeah, and it's... I love Cole. He has engineered himself into the most difficult book. There's 3 different page sizes.
oh man.
They're all like, it's all going to be printed duotone, which is, it's all black and white. So like, it's all very hard to like make sure everything is like on point. He picked a really weird paper stock. So I'm just going there and I have to make sure that we make the best possible thing. But it's going to be this insanely precious book. We're making 700 because the engineering and the cost of it is going to be so expensive to make. Like, it costs a chunk of loot to make the book. So we're making 700 because that helps make it make, like, it'll even out a little bit better that way.
Yeah.
And that's a lot. So I'm just hoping we're going to be able to move some. So we're going to have like a couple shows of the work in various places too, to help like push. And it's going to be fun.
I was going to ask you, when you, because you said, do you have shows with every release?
No, not every, but it's kind of like, it's been interesting, like lately, you know, with the books, since we're doing more books than we are zines, it slows down a little bit. And now we're kind of doing, we're doing more and more, like I just had a show, I just curated a show in Milan for a book that I did with Ed Pinar, which is all these photos from way north, northern California, where most of the marijuana, where most of marijuana is grown, you know, and there's a heavy marijuana industry. He would go up there and work for like the last 10 years or so. He was up there trimming the weed, but while he was up there, he was photographing the town and just like life up there. And so we put a book out of all the work that he worked on that for a long time. And I had Ed come out for that Paris show, that Paris book fair, to just do a signing. And then I was like, well, since you're going to be over there overseas and you're not, you don't, he doesn't go, I mean, he travels a lot, but he hasn't been over in Europe in forever. I was like, well, why don't we see if we can put something together? And these amazing friends of ours. They're like amazing friends of ours now. We didn't know them very well until we did this, but there's I honestly think it's probably the best bookshop in the world. This place called Mi Camera, which is a bookshop in Milan. And it's all photo books. It's like the best photo. It's the best.
I'd love to go there.
Yeah, I know. It's the best photo bookshop in the world. Like, it's just mind blowing.
You get lost in there for hours, I'm sure.
It's next level.
Like, I'll take one of everything.
Exactly. And oh my god. And the encyclopedic knowledge that they have about all their books that they have there is just amazing. Like the last day, while we were packing everything up and making sure, like doing our counts for all the books that we left behind so that they can, as we were there, I was like, Flavio, who is the guy who works there. And it's Flavio and Julia who, run the shop. And so I'm like, Flavio, sell me stuff. And he just showed me some of the most amazing photo books I've ever seen.
I love that.
And he was showing me shit that wasn't for sale, which was the most amazing thing. He's just like, you're going to love this, and you're going to love this. And he's just blowing my mind with some stuff.
Mm.
Both him and Julia are amazing, amazing people. But yeah, so anyway, we were talking about shows for books. It's not intentional, but I love doing it.
I was going to say that has to be like the best part, or like, the most rewarding thing at the end, to be like, and here it is, and show it and like invite people to come see. Like,
yeah, it's great. And it's, it's the best way to sell shit is like having the show and like, oh, you love this? Here's the book. You could just take the book. And
right.
Like, yeah.
That's so cool.
Like, that's how Hairdos of Defiance worked. Like, Ed was working on the idea of that book forever and then got offered a show by his gallery here in LA. And so I was like, well, I guess we got to launch the book for the show.
Yeah. Got to do a book.
Yeah. And he was like, oh yeah. And so we did it and it was amazing, So like it all kind of worked out perfect. Yeah.
Man. See, I love that. I really want to get sort of I know what you mean. Earlier you said, being out where you're at, you didn't really have someone to discuss art and photography and stuff with. So driving an hour away to go talk to Ed, like I'm kind of in that world now. I'm in a small town in the middle of Tennessee where I'm not from. I've only been here for, 6 or 7 years. So I still haven't really broke through to my people. And, usually when you do things like, set up shows or do, fun stuff like that, you always kind of have like a partner in crime or like a crew that you do stuff with. And I just haven't really tapped into that yet. So
So when I first moved here, I knew one person, which was that guy that I started the website with.
Yeah.
And that was it. And it was coming from Philly, where Philly is like both the art community and the punk community. Everybody knows everybody, and everybody's super, like, it's super heavy community. Like, I was living in punk houses where I lived with, like, 8 different people for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, and so, like, I was, like, very much, like, constantly, like, a warm blanket of friendship and community and caring about each other. And then I moved here, and there was, like, weeks where there would be a week easy where I wouldn't talk to anybody except for someone at the grocery store I was buying my, coffee or something.
Moving to a new city, no matter what, is always, you have to start over, and it's daunting, but I remember those days too, being like, I don't know anybody. I know my roommate and that's it.
And I moved here in my like mid to late 30s, and I realized very quickly, oh shit, adult men don't make new friends. Like, it's just like, everybody's kind of like locked in their way. And, I think I broke a little bit of that and like met a lot of really good people. I got lucky that, I knew a couple of people from when I lived in New York. They lived out here and like kind of just like met a lot of people from my one friend. And I moved here the same time as one of my best friends, who is this painter, Chris Johansson. He moved here at the same time, and we didn't know each other then, but he lived like 3 or 4 blocks away from me. So, and he's friends with he's friends with Ed Templeton from like the 90s and all the art shows that happened at Alleged and stuff like that. And so I quickly became friends with him just by being at a lot of the same shit. and then like walking down the street and being like, oh shit, hey man, you know, like things like that, you know? Yeah. It was like that kind of stuff. So, you know, I had a little bit of a leg up, but at the same time, I really didn't know that many people. And honestly, until I met my now wife, I had 1 foot out the door and 1 foot like permanently here. So I didn't really, I was always like, it's okay, but I don't know. And now, you know, I'm hitched. I'm not going anywhere.
Good.
So. And the only other question I was really thinking of is with you and the stress, well, not stress, but with Deadbeat Club going on all the time, you're kind of always working on that. Like, what do you ever feel like it kind of takes away from your own photography? Yeah. Like, are you
good question?
For sure. Like last year, I really pushed hard on Deadbeat Club and like turned it. Made a bunch of books and not, I made a couple zines too, but like, you know, put a lot into it. And unfortunately, because of that, I like something happened to like maybe like 2 years ago where I stopped always carrying a camera. Like I don't do, for lack of a better term, I don't do just street photography where it's like, okay, I'm going to go out and shoot. And now, or like, okay, I'm going out. I have to make sure I have my camera with me because whatever happens, I'm going to shoot.
Right.
Like I've become much more project based, and that one has really like slowed me way the fuck down. I am not like a constant machine of output, some of my friends. And that conscious decision really slowed things down, and it makes me uncomfortable about that, like knowing that I haven't really put anything out in a while. But then also putting as much focus as I have on Deadbeat Club has really made it tough for me to carve out the time to go work on the projects. Because the main project that I'm working on is actually about upstate New York, where my father's from. And I have to fly across the country, like get either a hotel room or an Airbnb and like carve and a rental car and like all these things and like carve out the time to make sure that happens. And, you know, it makes it really hard when you have to like, you know, constantly post on Instagram about like a book that you have and like make sure that the mail order is being taken care of and like all these other kind of things. So like it really has, I wouldn't say shut down my personal photography work, but it has slowed it for sure. But I like I'm not going to say it's going to happen, but like one of the goals that I have for this year is maybe trying to put that work, that one project to bed and create something.
Start something.
Make a book out of that work. And then, you know, that's the thing is like Deadbeat Club puts out a lot of Clint Woodside work. So, you know, it kind of goes hand in hand. So, you know, sometimes it's the same shit.
Yeah.
You know, like my personal career, my personal work is also Deadbeat Club. You know, so
at least you didn't have to, you know, your personal work didn't take a backseat to like some 9-to-5 you had to get, you know.
Yeah, but I have a little bit of that too. Like I work freelance.
Oh, sure, sure.
I do a ton of freelance graphic design, well, book design, for a couple people, and like I do a lot of curation, and I do a lot of, you know, just a lot of that. So like, there's months where I'm like ready to just like collapse and shut down. And like, I honestly have looked into land in like the middle of nowhere and just like, about selling everything off and just being like, fuck it, I'm just going to disappear. Mm-hmm. But
don't do
but
that.
But I'm trying.
Don't do that.
but yeah, so, but you know, it's also, there's no bigger reward than when the actual event that you've curated or the book that you've designed and all these things are just like in your hands.
And it's so cool you get to travel for it too. Like
I know. That's also I've never been to Paris. That was the first time I went to Paris. Never been to Milan. First time I went to Milan.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's all been pretty amazing stuff. I'm working on a show for that stuff that Cole did, that for that Cole book. We might do a show in Japan to like launch it. And
that'd be so sick.
I've been to Japan twice already and both of those things were book stuff. It's like I don't travel anymore unless there's, and my wife hates me for it, but I don't travel unless there's something we can do to like help push whatever it is, like either my personal work or the the book publishing stuff, you know, like.
Do you think you still get the same like satisfaction out of producing these books and zines as you do as like working on your own photography? Because I have, like, I always feel like I'm cheating. Like if I make a YouTube video or even with this podcast, you know, like this podcast takes up a lot of time and takes away from, you know, my personal work, and which is, you know, personal work to me is just, you know, shooting whatever projects are in my mind and stuff. I'm not like a published crazy photographer by any means. So,
yeah.
You know, like, do you still get that? Like, because I know what it's like to go out and like have that shot in the roll of the camera that, you know, is like, you know, it's like a hit of good drugs. Like mm-hmm. It's a rush when you know you got something awesome. Like, do you still get that like from Deadbeat Club? Are you fulfilled that way with like all the publishing and stuff like that?
I love it. I'm so psyched about it. Definitely. I think I'm a little tortured in the fact that none of it has been stuff that of my work recently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and how fucking selfish does that sound? but, you know, it's a reality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, it's really funny. Some of the work that I've been putting out, sometimes I just approach it as if it's like my work. You know, like, yeah. I'm just like, yeah. I mean, not literally, but I'll be like, I get this. And like, sometimes I'm designing stuff and I'm like, man, I wish this was mine.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And, but at the same time.
It just sounds like you're inspired all the time.
Exactly. Yeah, like, this is like, man, it's such an inspiring way to work on stuff. And it's like, you're like I did a zine for Jason Vaughn a little while ago and I was just like, man, this shit is so good.
Mm-hmm.
I got to go shoot some stuff.
I love that.
Like, it would be like that, you know, it's like watching a skate video or like,
yeah, but I was just going to say putting a skate video.
Yeah.
On.
Yeah. I have a really insane photo book library and I'll sit down when I'm really kind of like, wow, what am I doing? I'll sit down and just be like, well, let's see. Let's just get psyched. Like, let's go look at Friedlander's Factory Valleys and just be like, whoa, that is some shit. And be like, oh, I do need to start shooting more people. And or like, you know, or like, you know, it's just like, I just get psyched on other people's work, and I always have. And it, whether or not they're my friends or people I've looked up to as photographers. So
love that.
Great.
But yeah, you know, you don't want to live in a vacuum. You want to it's good to know the other work out there, because you don't want to embarrass yourself by making something that's just something that's already been completely done to death.
A copy.
Yeah.
We'll be right back with a couple questions from our listeners for Clint after this message from our sponsor. All right, so today's episode is brought to you by our Patreon. It's brought to you by us. So Chris and I, this past month, have been in the process of revamping the Patreon. We took some stuff away that wasn't working, and we brought some stuff in that we have a feeling is going to be a lot easier for us to fulfill for you guys, for the Patreons we already have, and for, you know, the new Patreons that come and help support this show. I know the first thing we're going to bring in is kind of a guest after show. You know, after we're done recording the episode, we're going to do kind of either, you know, find something that our guest is interested in. They can show us, you know, their camera collection or their photo books or prints, or, you know, maybe it's even something not photography related. But we wanted to do video for you guys, and, you know, we tried doing the full episode video, but, you know, most of you guys listen to it on whatever podcast app that you have. Go over and check it out. We have some stuff already listed. We haven't done the full launch yet, but we will be the beginning of February. We're gonna have like a new video up. We're gonna do a whole bunch of awesome stuff. But this coming Friday will be kind of the rough example of what we're planning on doing with Clint. So you'll get to see Clint's photo book collection and some of his favorite photo books. So it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool what he shows us, and I'm excited for you guys to see. So yeah, go over, check it out. Thanks a lot, guys, for all the patrons that have supported us already, and for all you newcomers, head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. All right, guys, this is a part of the show where we break off and take a question from one of our listeners. And this week's question comes from Photolab Psyche. And he asks, what medium format camera would you recommend for someone who usually shoots 35?
First of all, hi, Jake. How are you, buddy? this is a student that I did a workshop with over the summer.
Cool.
He's awesome.
Oh. Hey, yeah, Jake, thanks for sending the question.
Yeah, Jake's rad. What medium format? So I think it's kind of dependent on what you're shooting with in the first place. So the way I got, so I shoot with a Mamiya 7, which, I shoot my 30, so I started shooting with 35, just like the caller, we'll call him.
Yeah.
No, just like Jake, I've started with just 35 and didn't really start fucking with medium format until a lot later. But I was shooting with all rangefinders when I returned to photography. It's weird. When I returned to photography, I bought an Electro 35 camera, which by Yashica, which is a rangefinder that I found in a thrift store. And I was like, I don't like this digital stuff. Oh, here's this film camera. I'm sure this will do fine. And so I started shooting with that, and it was a rangefinder. And I was like, oh, this is way more fun than anything I was shooting with before. And then eventually, like, built up into various versions. I was shooting with that, and then I went into a Bessa Voigtlander and bought Leica lenses because that fits on the Bessa.
Yeah, they fit. Mm-hmm.
This has nothing to do with the medium format question that he's asking. So anyways, I shot with a ton of rangefinders until I was like, I want a medium format. And very easily and very quickly, I felt at home with my Mamiya 7 because it's basically a large medium format rangefinder. And that's the thing. It's like I felt super comfy right away because it's basically what I was shooting with already. That said, I think there's a lot of things you got to think about. There's ratios of the film that you're shooting with. You know, there's the Mamiya 7 is a 6-7 camera, so it's a squat rectangle, like landscape rectangle.
Yeah,
sometimes that pisses me off, and I wish that it was much more the format of the 35, so that way everything was just kind of all the same format if I was showing it in
I
the
agree
show.
I shoot a lot of 6-7, yeah. And I feel that way too.
But I also love 6-7. If it was, so the project that I'm working on right now in upstate New York, I'm shooting it all on my Mamiya 7. So everything will be that ratio, and it will feel, there won't be a weird break between things shot one way and things shot the other way because it's all shot the same way. Anyway, I think, you know, look at the rectangles that feel the most comfortable to you, like maybe drop some of your favorite photos in those rectangles and kind of be like, does it feel right? Like, you know, but just try out all the other kinds of focusing systems that you like. Like, I don't know what Jake is shooting with. I can't remember. Sorry, buddy. But I really like my Mamiya 7 because it's a rangefinder. Maybe you'll really like GR7-1 or whatever the fucking thing is. I can't remember what it's called, but it's like the one that you look down in and you turn the thing, and I don't know. I don't have it.
Oh.
I never shot with it, so.
Like the RB?
Yes.
Like the square?
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. So like maybe you'll like a square format, but also maybe you'll like the way that the focusing system works with that, which is completely different than the other. You just got to kind of test a lot of shit out and find out what feels.
Yeah, I feel, I mean, that's how I figured it out.
Yeah,
you know, I'm mostly like when I got back into shooting film, I shot a lot of SLRs, so
yeah.
You know, that the camera we were just talking about, the RB67, I love that camera.
Yeah.
And still do to this day, just love that, you know, being able to the depth of the focus and stuff. With rangefinders, you really don't see depth.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's kind of all in how you see, you know. Now I'm all about rangefinders, so
yeah.
It's
you know, it takes a lot of experimenting and trying stuff out. That's kind of what I'm doing with all the rental stuff, is just trying a bunch of shit out and seeing what.
That's
feels
another
good.
Thing I was gonna say. We had a guest, we had a guest on who runs his own like film camera rental shop.
Yeah.
It's called Film Objective.
Adam.
That's definitely a good way to cost effectively try, instead of, you know, dropping a couple grand on a Mamiya 7 or
and then being
couple...
like, oh, this thing sucks. Like, you don't want to do that.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
like, you know, I don't know. What's the name of that place?
Oh, Film Objective.
Film Objective.
Jake, check those dudes out.
Yeah. I just realized every medium format camera I've owned or shot with has been a 6.45.
Yeah.
In photography school, it was Mamiya 6.45. That was my first introduction to medium format, because I was shooting 35 up until then.
Yeah.
And that was like part of the tuition was you get a huge medium format camera.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I remember I sold it for like $800 when I was like, never gonna need this again, idiot. and then I had a Contax 6.45, which I've talked about that camera on the show a million times. I loved and regret that I've sold, but now I have the Pentax 6.45, and I don't know why. I just realized that's the only size I've shot. When I don't know. I've got to expand that. I don't know. Just what I've always had, and I love the size, but I don't know what I'm missing
either.
That
works for you, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at the same time, so like I always shot 6.7, and when I rented that Fuji that I just rented like last week, I actually returned it yesterday. That's all 6.45, and I was like, oh shit, this is nice. Mm-hmm. It's like.
Yeah.
It's much more rectangular and it feels more like, you know, it feels more at home, I guess. But so it really kind of like slapped me in the face a little bit because I've been like waiting, like, all these digital medium formats suck. They don't ever put out a 6.7. Nothing's like the Mamiya, blah, 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 blah. And now I've shot with 6.45. I'm like, oh, this is nice, mm-hmm. you know? So like, I don't know. Like everybody's kind of got their own thing, you know?
Yeah. I would say, back to the film objective. It is the best way to try different things and see what you like. And
I think that's awesome. Yeah. I think I wish that there was more of that, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's cool. That's really cool.
His Instagram handle is @shutupjesus. Love that. So good. And he said, hey, Clint, how does one get on your amazing roster of zines that you have made? Any personal photo projects in the works? So it's a twofer. Twofer on this one.
This is also somebody I know. Hi.
Oh, okay.
Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Andrew.
Andrew rules. He comes to every Deadbeat Club thing, and he comes to every photo show. He's like the hardest. Him and his brother, they're the hardest working photo nerds in Los Angeles. It's cool. Crazy.
Nice.
So, and they are like heavy film dudes. It's pretty fun.
Love it.
So, yeah, getting a hold of the stuff that I have put out, you have to move quicker because they're sold out. That's the problem. You know, like I keep like 3 or 4 copies of everything that I've put out just for my own archive. But yeah, it's just when I was doing stuff in the beginning, it took forever to sell out. And then like after a while, like now, I mean, I don't know if I have any heavy following, but like shit sold eventually. So I hope that, you know, there's some way, maybe, sucks to say, look and see if you can find anything on eBay or anything like that. And I wish I had enough to sell. I kind of have this weird thing about, with zines especially, it's like, okay, this is the zine. It's just a small, like, it's a sketch and it's an idea and it's like, let's just get it out and like move on to the next thing. So I don't really do reprints of zines that often. I mean, I haven't for my own stuff personally at all. But yeah, it's tough. I was saying I try to make enough so it's not an elitist thing, but I guess eventually it always becomes that way because
it runs out.
You can only make so much, you know?
Yeah.
So, and if I did a reprint, it would take forever for the stuff to sell out. So that would just be a kicking the nuts.
What about, do you ever think of doing like a retrospect kind of like of all your little zines and stuff that you've done?
I think it's too soon for me to be like, Woodside retrospective,
right.
Like that's way too early for that kind of stuff. I got a lot of work to do before I have my mid-career, you know, retrospective anything like that. I don't know, there's moments where I'm like, oh, we could put out like a Deadbeat Club book where it's just like photos from all the stuff we put out, but then I was like, well, we already put the shit out,
right,
so why
true.
Why make it again, you know? So I don't know what that would be yet, but also I feel like we have a couple years before we should probably, maybe Deadbeat Club 100 should be some kind of like retrospective thing or something, but I don't even know if that's right yet. I don't know, we'll see.
Yeah,
we'll see when we get there. We'll see what life is like once we if we get to 100. I hope we do, but whatever.
I think you will.
You're getting to 100.
But like I said, like if it's an experiment, so like if it's not working, I'm not going to force it. So, you know, fingers crossed we get to 100. Knock wood. You know, whatever. We'll see. I don't know if the mic picked that up, but I knocked wood. So projects that I'm working on right now, I'm working on a project that's all upstate New York, where my father grew up. It's all shot, like we said, on 6.7. I'm hoping that it will be done at the end of the year. There's, you know, I'd still like to make at least 2 or 3 trips to the town to shoot and dive in a lot deeper than I have so far. I'm happy with where it is. I'm really happy with where it is right now, but I know it's not done yet. So there's some work to be done. I shot a ton. So Alex and I, my wife, on our honeymoon, we went to Morocco for and I shot the shit out of Morocco.
That's a great place to go honeymoon.
Yeah, it was fun. And so I shot a lot of photos while I was there. I came back with, like, I usually, you know, when I go on trips, it's like, I don't shoot. I'm very slow. So I'll come back with, like,
me too,
six to 10 rolls. And I came back with like 15 to 20 rolls for this. So I'm going to try to comb through that and see if I can bang something out in time for the LA Art Book Fair. But that's in early April. So I'm not sure if I'm going to or not. Like, I looked through the stuff and I like it. I don't know if it's me just being like, I haven't put anything out in a while, I should just put something out. Or if it's like actually something I should put out. And that's when, I mean, the last real thing I put out was, besides that like one sheet that was in free with the mail, the last major thing I put out was this split book that was all about shooting in the valley with my friend Dan Monick. And we only made 200 of those, and that sold out really quick because it was like a catalog for a show that we had. So it feels like it's been a long time since I've put something out. So it becomes like a really, like, I have to be very mindful that I'm putting out something because it needs to come out and not because it's like, well, I haven't done anything in a while, so I guess I got to do something, you know, like,
right.
I don't believe in that. You got to put something out when it's good. That's the question.
I like that answer.
Yeah. Me too.
That's a good answer. Yeah. Both great questions, guys. Thanks for sending those in. So I guess this is kind of like one of the main tough questions that we always ask our guests. Mm-hmm. We didn't really make it this far last time because I think we had some technical issues, as we said before.
Okay.
But we have, it's a two-part question as well. It's kind of, I mean, it seems like you have, I've heard you talk about a camera quite a bit, so I think we might already know the answer. But desert island camera, if you could only choose one.
Forever.
You know, and you're stuck on this island, and the island does have a lab and an unlimited supply of film, and you don't have to worry about any of that stuff. So.
And amazingly, I can't contact anybody outside of, you know.
Yeah.
That's pretty trippy.
Yeah.
So I guess, see, that's tough because, so on the Morocco trip, I took my Leica because I was just kind of like, okay, I'm going to be running and gunning, and it's like much different than like the other thing. But if I'm stuck on an island, I'm going to be slowing it down because if it's a deserted island and it's just me, you're going to get meditative. So I'd probably go with the Mamiya 7. I mean, I shoot with the Mamiya 7, but then and on that I have a 65 and an 80. And I guess probably I wouldn't mind getting one, maybe, I think there's a 120 that is the next one up. I'm not quite sure. Maybe I'd like to throw that in the mix if that's where I am forever and ever. But I really do love that rig. So I guess I'm going to go with that one. Yeah.
I mean, it's a great camera.
Say, good
that's
choice.
A great answer.
I would also, though, like to modify my Mamiya 7 to a metering through the lens because it doesn't.
It doesn't?
No.
I didn't know that.
And,
okay.
And I have shot many a photo thinking I just crushed it when I have the lens when I have the lens cap on. So, that
rangefinder fail.
Seriously. So that is a huge issue with that camera. That they pretended to fix with the 7.2, which you can shoot twice without advancing the film, but you just don't notice it until you walk away and you're like, fuck, did I?
Yeah.
Just...
yeah.
And you don't even know. You don't even know if you did it. You're like, fuck, did I just take that photo with the lens cap on? I don't even know. Like, because it's like so, so reflex to put the cap back on when you're done.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so I don't even know until I get the film and I'm like, oh, look at all these
blank frames.
Yeah. I'm not a very good photographer. Yeah.
Oh man. And the second part of the question is the white whale. Like, is there a camera that you're, you know, that's kind of always been on your bucket list of cameras that, you know, you've wanted?
I don't know. I want a six by nine medium format camera that is that's good. And there's a Fuji one, there's two Fuji ones, and they have a fixed lens that you can't change, and you can either get this, I think it's a 65 or a 90.
Yeah.
And there's no meter inside the fucking camera. So,
oh, I didn't know that either. Jeez.
In either version of it. So that drives me completely insane. And like, I had this master plan. I bought the 90 version and I had this master plan that I was going to shoot no matter what I shot. If I was shooting 35 or 6x9, those are the same ratios. So like so I could make all the prints the same ratio. And then there'd be, when I'm showing stuff, it wouldn't feel like different in any way. It'd all feel like it was all shot the same way. Obviously, you know, you get much more detail and intensity with a medium format camera. So I would like to invent a 6x9 that works really well. That's one thing I wouldn't mind. And then, you know, I always bullshit about getting an 8x10. And I have a 4x5 and I barely ever use it. And I think it's because the medium format just, I really like the ease of use and but an 8x10 would be really nice to take for a ride and see how it all feels. Yeah. I don't know.
I agree. It's gotta be so much different than 4x5. I feel like 8x10 just takes it to that whole like other level of things.
Right.
I agree.
Right. Yeah.
I always forget about that when I think about like my dream camera is, I forget about large format.
Yeah, an 8x10. Yeah.
Yeah.
What is your dream camera?
Man, I have so many, but I really would love just like a classic black brassed out M6 with, you know, like a 35 millimeter lens on it. That's probably like my dream, which is, you know, it's definitely doable. It's just, I gotta find the right one and nothing too crazy.
What about you?
Probably I'm back and forth between the M6 and the M7.
Yeah. Why the M6? I'm wondering, like, what ratio is that also? I know it exists and I never looked into it. Is that square?
The Leica M6?
Oh, the M6.
Yeah.
Jesus. Oh my God.
That's okay.
I was thinking of
the Mamiya 6.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Mamiya 6 is 6x6. It is square.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay. Cool. Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of the same. Like that's my setup. Is I have, well, it's an M7 or a Mamiya 7. So it's kind of like, I feel.
Yeah, I have a lot of cameras, and we've talked about that. I wouldn't get rid of them, but I just like the idea of, like, you know, traveling with one camera. Like, this is the one camera that I always have, you know.
Yeah, I have. So I have a Konica. What the hell is it? The RF, or I can't remember, whatever the one is that has lenses you can take off, and it takes M mount lenses.
I think that is the RF.
So I have that one, and it's my backup in case my Leica shits the bed a little bit. I've had some winding issues with it, and I enjoy that camera because it also has auto winding. Ooh. And stuff like that. So it's kind of like, oh, this is fun. It's like so fancy. But that thing has like the biggest, like you look at it wrong and the rangefinder gets out of whack and your focus gets all fucked.
Yeah.
So I've actually I've realized that I'm more and more just stripping down to just those two cameras, and it makes things easy. But then, you know, like I said, I was looking at all those digital ones just to kind of see what's going on in the world, because you got to do something, you know?
Yeah. So, it's good to check in on that every once in a while.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Well, yeah.
Well, cool.
Good answers. Good answers.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Clint, this has been awesome. Thanks for joining us, and thanks for coming back. We're excited to have you back on the show. We were so bummed the last time.
Yeah, I know.
It wouldn't be an analog talk show if we didn't have technical difficulties,
exactly.
Right, Timothy?
We didn't have crazy difficulties. Yeah. That's true. That's very true.
Where can everybody check you out and your stuff, Deadbeat Club stuff?
Probably, you know, well, my website is just clintwoodside.com, and my Instagram is just clintwoodside at the Instagrams.
Yep.
You know, and then Deadbeat Club, you know, we got our online shop and everything, which is just deadbeatclubpress.com. And basically, if you're interested in what we're up to, our Instagram is the best way to like be up to date on the latest. Like, we do have an email list and everything, and we do send emails from, like, probably we try not to go over once a month. But I am about to take a workshop on email marketing.
Ooh, nice.
Like, what? Yeah. I've gotten, like, really mindful about that stuff, and Because I'm always really nervous about being like, oh, I don't want to bother anybody.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I don't
want
to be like an annoying nag. So, but I'm like taking, I want to like take classes and make sure I'm a businessman now. I got to do it right. But yeah, you can see us at deadbeatclubpress.com, and our Instagram is just deadbeatclub. And those are the two best ways to find us.
Cool.
Yeah.
What about you, Timothy?
Guys, you can find me over on Instagram at Timothy Makeups. I'm also bringing back my YouTube series. I've kind of changed it around a little bit. It used to be called A Day in a Life, but I'm just keeping it, you know, We Believe in Film, kind of the hashtag I've been using for a long time. So look for that. I have an update video going to drop, I would say, Sunday. I'm going to make my upload days on Sundays just to make it easier, because Sundays are
coming back.
Yeah, Sundays are a sleepy day and a good day to just kind of like sit back and watch stuff. But yeah, just go to the search bar on YouTube.com and just search Timothy.makeups. You'll find a whole bunch of stuff over there. Chris, where are you at?
So I'm Crispy Photo on Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. I make YouTube videos as well, although I got to get back to it. We are Analog Talk Pod on Twitter, Analog Talk Podcast on Instagram. You guys can follow us there. And we have a Facebook page that you could like, and a group that you can join and share stuff and ask questions and all that stuff too. Yeah, that's it for us.
Clint, this is
Thanks,
awesome.
Clint.
Yeah. Thanks. Good times.
All right, everybody. We'll see you in the next one.
Bye.
Bye.
First off, we want to thank Clint for being on the show. Clint, this was great. I'm so glad we finally made it through one of these, and it was awesome getting to hear kind of from start to finish Deadbeat Club and, you know, your views on printing and your photography, and it was just awesome. I'm glad we made it through this, because like we said before, we had a catastrophic failure the last time we tried to record, and we just didn't get through it. You know, as Chris and I always say, it wouldn't be a recording of Analog Talk without some sort of catastrophe happening. But yeah, that brings us to our Patreon. Like I said earlier in the show during our commercial break, you know, we got a bunch of new stuff coming. The official launch of the Patreon will be in the beginning of February. We're going to be doing some video stuff. It's going to be awesome. Really nailing out the live stream, group hangs, da 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 da, you know, all the fun stuff that we've always talked about. We're finally pulling through. We're also going to be naming and listing our Patreons for every episode, including new, and I'm excited. I'm really excited about the launch of the new Patreon. So, but yeah, until next week, it's great to be back, man. Season 3, here we go. And we'll see you next week with an all-new episode. Later.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.